Today we're going to be talking about the household production model of labor supply. In this model, we're looking at the allocation of time not between two tasks as in the simple neoclassical model, but among all the possible uses of time. The basic household production model is based on the assumption that utilities derive from consumption of n final commodities. We call these commodities Zi for I equals 1 to n. Each of these commodities we can think of as the activities that individuals engage in that ultimately give them utility, that individuals ultimately derive satisfaction from. We assume that each of these commodities is produced and consumed within the household by combining the household's time and purchased inputs. As an example of this, we can note that an individual derives utility from actually watching a movie, not from just purchasing a ticket to the movie. The final commodity of watching a movie requires the use of both time and purchased inputs. In the simple model that we talked about before, and the simple model you studied in probably most of your other economics classes, you only look at the cost of a good as if it was just the price of a good. But the actual price of a good includes not just the cost, or the actual cost of a good includes all opportunity costs, not just the cost of anything you actually have to buy, not just the explicit cost, but all opportunity costs. And virtually anything you can think of that provides utility requires not only that you spend some money on the activity, but it also requires the use of your time. That going out and buying a new TV doesn't give you much benefit unless you actually spend some time watching it. Buying new books doesn't give you much benefit unless you actually read those books, or at least you look at those books so that you get to spend some time enjoying the decorative effect or the actual consumption of the books. You don't get utility from going out and buying food, you get utility from consuming the food. Okay, so that's the type of thing we're thinking about in the household production model. The basic notion is that anything you do requires some of your time and some purchased input. As an example of this, on the very first or second day of the course, actually I believe on the very first day of the course, it was noted that the activity of acquiring a college degree required not only that you pay the tuition, books, supply, library fines, overdue payments and so on, phone bills, etc., but it also requires the use of your time, the time that could otherwise be spent in alternative activities. And in fact, we noted that the largest share of the cost of college often involves the opportunity cost of time. In general, the full cost of any activity, as noted previously, involves the cost of both the time and the purchased inputs. We've already talked a little bit about the opportunity cost of movies and similarly college enrollment of college. But an interesting point, and one we made earlier in the course, is that college enrollments often increase during a recession, which is something that people didn't often anticipate until they actually looked at the data. And the reason is that the full cost of a college degree tends to go down during a recession, because even though tuition tends not to change in real terms during a recession, the opportunity cost, or the expected opportunity cost of time, goes down. That if the alternative to going to college when you graduate from high school is being unemployed 30 or 40 or 50% of the year, the actual earnings that you give up by going to college is substantially lower during the recession than it would be during a period of prosperity. It actually costs more to go to college when you're giving up a higher paying alternative job. Now we're going to look at the more formal model of the household production model. The first assumption we're going to make is that utility, as noted before, is derived from the consumption of n final commodities or n final activities, Z1 through Zn. And Zi is defined to be the level of both production and consumption of the activity. And these activities we have to think of as being not only produced in the home, but consumed in the home. And both the production and the consumption requires time and purchase inputs. The relationship between the output of these activities, or the final commodities, and the inputs is given by the equation Zi is equal to Fi of Ti and Xi, where Ti is defined to be the amount of time devoted to both producing and consuming commodity I, and Xi is the quantity of purchased inputs used to produce and consume this commodity. This is a composite commodity, as we talked about in our simple neoclassical model, analogous to the variable Y, and this composite commodity is an index of all the goods and services, all the stuff that's used, all the stuff you have to purchase to produce the final commodities, Zi. As an example of this, again, if you're going to prepare a meal, it requires time shopping for ingredients, time actually cooking the meal, or if you go out to a restaurant to get the meal, it requires time traveling to the restaurant, waiting for the order to be taken, waiting for the meal to be served, and actual time spent physically consuming it. If you eat the meal at home, there's also time spent cleaning up, washing dishes, cleaning all the tables, cleaning the floors, and so on, if you're relatively messy. But in general, there's a lot of different types of time, or times used in a variety of ways here. Similarly, the purchase inputs would be all the stuff you buy to get those final activity produced. In the case of a movie, the time would be the time spent traveling to the movie, the time spent physically watching the movie, and the time spent returning from the movie. The purchase inputs would be any transportation costs, the cost of the tickets to the movie, and perhaps I suppose you could throw in the cost of popcorn, drinks, and so on that are consumed during the movie. In making these choices, there's a couple of constraints, as in the previous model. The first is a time constraint, and the time constraint tells us that the sum of the use of time in all of the activities, the sum of the TIs, as defined here, plus time spent at work, T sub W, is equal to T, the total amount of time available. All this is saying is that there's some total amount of time available that can be divided up among all the possible production activities and consumption activities within the household, and the time spent in the paid labor market. The goods constraint in the model is given by the sum of the expenditures on all the purchased inputs used, the sum of the PXI, must add up to your total income. And in this case, we'll deal with the simplest case, where the only income derived in this model is from earned labor income. So the income here would just be the wage rate, the payment per hour work, times T sub W, the number of hours that you choose to work. So what this goods constraint is telling you is that total expenditures must equal total income. Again, we're simplifying here so that we don't have to analyze choice over the life cycle. That can be done fairly easily, but the analysis becomes a bit messier, and that's something that's generally saved for more advanced courses. All the results that we derive later from this turn out not to be sensitive to the possibility of borrowing or lending. That all that does is introduce some choice over the lifestyle or some substitution possibilities from one time period to another, but the basic results involving labor supply and so on are all essentially the same. If anyone would like some further information on that, I'd be happy to provide a list of references. Now, as we did before, we solved the time constraint for time spent at work, T sub W, and that's equal to TW equals total time available T minus the sum of the time spent in all of the household production and consumption activities. We substitute that into the goods constraint, and we end up with the equation at the bottom of the screen, that the sum of the expenditures on all the purchased inputs equals W times the quantity T minus the sum of the TIs. Simplifying this and solving this for WT, we now have it in a full income constraint. It's quite analogous, but a little bit more elaborate than the full income constraint we derived in the basic neoclassical model. The left-hand side of this equation, WT, is a level of full income. This is equal to, as defined before, the individual's maximum earnings potential. And the maximum earnings potential, in this case, is just the total number of available hours times the wage. That's the most anyone could earn in this model. On the right-hand side of this, we note that full income can be spent on either buying goods and services, the PXI terms in that summation, or on the opportunity cost of the time used in household production. In each element in the summation, PXI is the explicit cost of the purchased inputs, the purchased goods and services used to produce the final commodities, and WTI is the opportunity cost of the time used to produce commodity I. An alternative way of expressing this is to write this as WT is equal to the sum of FCI, where FCI is defined as the full cost of commodity I. And for each individual item, the full cost of commodity I is the sum of the explicit cost and the opportunity cost of time. So what happens here is that the full costs here involve the complete opportunity cost of any of the activities that individuals engage in. And again, that's the sum of any direct expenditures on purchased commodities, the PXI, as well as the opportunity cost of the time spent in the activity. That when you spend an additional hour on watching TV, or an additional hour washing dishes, or an additional hour cooking meal, it's one less hour available for alternatives. And if your next best alternative is working, the best measure of the opportunity cost of time would be the wage rate, which is what you give up per hour, times the quantity of time used in that activity. Now, we assume that individuals will always select a mix of time and purchase inputs that allows them to produce any given level of ZI at the lowest possible full cost. So we're going to assume that from all the possible ways of producing the ZIs, that individuals will select whatever combination of time and purchase inputs is the cheapest. Okay? And there's a number of things that can be predicted by this, and some of them are listed here. The first item, the first bullet here, is the growth of the fast food industry. That the fast food industry is a relatively recent historic innovation. That if we go back 30 or 40 years, fast food restaurants were quite rare. Now they account for a fairly large share of a household's expenditures. And one of the reasons for that, in general, is the increase in the opportunity cost of time. In practice, one of the major factors here is the opportunity cost of time for married females. That if we go back 30 to 40 years ago, the largest share of the meals prepared in the household tended to be provided by the married female in the household. And what we observe today is that, in general, much less time is spent within a typical household preparing meals. And one of the major factors is simply the increase in the opportunity cost of time. So what we've observed is that households have shifted from a time-intensive way of producing meals to a less time-intensive method of producing and consuming meals. And the growth of fast food, the increase in use of frozen meals, prepared meals, microwave ovens, and so on, all involve a replacement of purchased inputs for time in response to a higher opportunity cost of time. Second point noted here is that this model can also explain why convenience stores can survive, even though they charge higher prices than grocery stores. That when we think about the cost of buying a can of soda, a six-pack of beer, a quart of milk, a roll of toilet paper, whatever, the cost of buying that includes not only the direct expenditure on the commodity, but it also includes the opportunity cost of the time spent acquiring those items. And if individuals decide they want to go out and buy a half gallon of ice cream or soda or whatever, they have to take into account all of the costs. So when we think about it in that perspective, in any given community, there's a relatively small number of grocery stores, typically, that on average, for a typical household, are further away than the closest convenience store. There's more convenience stores within a given community, which means the cost or the amount of time that a typical household, at least, would spend traveling to a convenience store would tend to be less than the amount of time required to travel to a grocery store. Furthermore, convenience stores tend to be relatively small, and it's relatively easy to locate the items that are located there. Grocery stores tend to be much larger, and it generally takes more time to actually locate items and actually pay for those items. There's more likely to be lines at cash registers typically in grocery stores than in most convenience stores. So what happens basically is that even though the cost of the commodity itself, the PXI cost for convenience stores may be higher, the opportunity cost of the time spent in locating and buying and transportation time and so on in convenience stores tends to be lower, which explains why individuals will sometimes prefer to use convenience stores to grocery stores, even though they pay more per item. The third point that can be explained by the household production model is the decline in fertility. That one of the actions that households engage in, that households tend to engage in, that's relatively time intensive, married households at least, and many non-married households, is having children. And one of the things that any parent would tend to note of about raising children is that it's an extremely time intensive type of activity. And one of the factors here is that as the opportunity cost of time has increased, Again, particularly given relatively large increase in female wages, where we observe that females disproportionately, at least, have historically and even in recent years spent much more time raising and rearing children than married males have tended to. So what we observe is, in response to higher wage rates, we see a decline in the number of children that households tend to choose. That in general, households choose to select lower levels of completed fertility, in part because children are relatively more expensive due to an increase in the opportunity cost of time. That we might see people taking more vacations, they might be more likely to buy a pet, join a health club, or engage in activities that are less time intensive perhaps than raising children, when the relative cost of time or the relative price of time rises relative to the cost of the purchased inputs used to produce household commodities. And the final point mentioned here is why many people choose not to use coupons in grocery stores. One of the things we observe is that some people go through their Sunday newspapers and other newspapers that have bundles of coupons in it and sort through them very carefully. Other people choose never to do that. One of the reasons why this sort of mechanism exists is because it's sorting people in part according to the opportunity cost of time. That in order to use a coupon, not only do you have to physically bring the coupon, but you have to spend some time sorting through the coupons, keeping track of those coupons, remembering to bring them with you, sorting through them while you're in the grocery store and getting them all out and ready when you get in line. Now, the dollar cost of the coupons is relatively low. In fact, it's close to zero for individuals who would be subscribing to the newspaper for other reasons. However, the opportunity cost of the time spent using these coupons tends to be non-zero. In general, is non-zero. So what happens is that people will choose to use coupons if the full cost to them is lower when they buy groceries with coupons than it would be if they choose to buy the groceries without coupons. For individuals who have a very low opportunity cost of time, it may be profitable to spend an hour or so a week in order to save $8 or $9 a week through the use of coupons. On the other hand, if someone's opportunity cost of time is $30 an hour, it would not be profitable to spend an hour of time using coupons that will save them $7 or $8 when they have to give up $30 or more to do that. So in general, what happens is individuals with a low opportunity cost of time tend to use coupons, while individuals with a high opportunity cost of time will tend not to use coupons. Now we'll look at a more formal diagrammatic representation of the household production model. The diagram appearing on the bottom of the screen contains an isoquant that illustrates alternative combinations of time and purchased inputs that result in the production of a given number of meals of a given quality. So we're dealing with a specific commodity, which is meals of a given quality, assuming that the household's producing output efficiently, meaning they're getting the maximum amount of output possible given the combinations of time and purchased inputs. So this isoquant curve here gives all the alternative combinations of Ti and Xi, time and purchased inputs, that result in the production of a given number of meals of a given quality as perceived by the household. We can note that in this model, the isoquant curve is also an indifference curve, as your text refers to it, since the production consumption of a given quantity of Zi results in a constant level of utility. Because remember, utility is a function of the quantity of the Zi consumed. So if the quantity of Zi remains constant, it's both a fixed quantity, so we're on an isoquant, as well as a fixed level of utility, so we're on an indifference curve. So this Zi curve here is both an isoquant and an indifference curve. In practice, it's probably more useful to think of this, though, as an isoquant, because the tools we're going to use are those that we derived earlier when we talked about the optimal mix of inputs in the production process. Just to talk a little bit more about the shape of this curve, this curve is downward sloping, as in earlier isoquants we talked about, and let's think about why that might occur. And let's look at some of the points on this. If we look at point A, we're going to have meals of a given quality prepared, one option is to spend a large amount of time and a small amount of purchased inputs. That's what's being illustrated at point A. In this case, the individual might, for example, be preparing meals by buying very basic ingredients such as flour, shortening, vegetables, meat, and other essentially raw materials that aren't very processed or packaged and so on. In fact, I suppose in an extreme you might have the individual growing their own vegetables and perhaps raising their own cattle, chicken, and so on, where there is a relatively small amount of purchased inputs per meal prepared in terms of the dollar expenditure, but a relatively large amount of time. So here what we have is a mix of inputs where we have lots of time being used but relatively low purchased inputs. For example, an individual, if we're looking at if ZI is the amount of bread consumed within the household rather than this more general concept of meals, we can think of point A as representing a point where the individual buys flour, yeast, salt, and so on, and bakes the bread from scratch. The amount of purchased inputs used there would be extremely low, but the amount of time required would tend to be relatively high. Point B, we have a more intermediate possibility here, where an individual might be preparing meals of the same quality as at point A, except now they're using some prepackaged mixes, or perhaps frozen meals, or other types of preprocessed ingredients, where they buy things that are at least partially prepared, and they're using less of their own time in the preparation process, but they're using more purchased inputs. That the cost of the purchased inputs now are higher at point B than at point A. At point C, you've moved to a situation where an even smaller amount of the individual's own time is being used and where there's a larger amount of purchased inputs being consumed here. And this might be an example where an individual goes to a restaurant or has meals delivered to their home from a Chinese restaurant or from a pizzeria or something similar. So at this point, the individual is spending much less time preparing the meal, cooking the meal, washing dishes and cleaning up and so on, but they're still spending some time because it obviously still requires some time to physically consume the meal, but they're spending much more on purchased inputs. Now, in general, we'd expect this sort of inverse relationship to occur in virtually any sort of production process. For example, suppose that we're looking at the possible combinations of time and purchased inputs to provide all a given quality of child, if you want to think of it in that sense. And in fact, many economists have modeled the quality of children in this sense. That if you're going to have a child of a given quality, there are many different combinations of time and purchased inputs that will allow you to produce that level of child quality for a given number of children. And point A, for example, might be a situation where one parent spends virtually all of his or her time in rearing that child, where that individual chooses not to work but spends much of her own time playing with that child, working with that child, taking care of the child, and so on. Point B might be a situation where one or both parents perhaps are working either part or full time, but still spending a fair amount of their own time raising their child. But they do use a daycare center perhaps, and so on. Point C might be a situation where the individual has a full-time, or where the child has a full-time nanny, for example, as suggested in class, or it might be a case where the child is sent off to a boarding school, or it may be just a case where the parents spend very little of their own time, but spend much more on purchased inputs in terms of alternative forms of child care arrangements, and so on. In general, points that lie above an isoquant correspond to the production of a higher level of ZI. So for example, point D, since it lies above and to the right of point A, for example, involves using more time and purchased inputs, which if you're using more time and purchased inputs and producing output efficiently, must involve the production of a higher level of output. So we know there's some isoquant curve going through point D. That's been illustrated as a ZI equals ZI1 isoquant, and that corresponds to a higher level of output. In general, any point that lies above an isoquant involves the production of a higher level of ZI. Any point that lies below the isoquant involves the production of a lower quantity of ZI. As we had before when we talked about the optimal mix of production inputs, when we talked about long run labor demand theory and in a variety of contexts, iso-cost curves can be used here, and the slope of the iso-cost curve, as in earlier cases, is a negative of the price of the input on a horizontal axis divided by the price of the input on the vertical axis. In this case, the input on the horizontal axis is time, the implicit price of time is the wage rate, and the explicit price of good x, the variable on the vertical axis, is p. So the slope of the ISO cost curve is a negative w over p. We've proved that several times in alternative contexts for ISO cost curves. And in general, the slope of any ISO cost curve, any linear ISO cost curve at least, will always be the negative of the price of the variable on the horizontal, the input on the horizontal axis, divided by the price of the input on the vertical axis. And one other thing we can note about this is we have three ISO cost curves here, and as we move from the one closest to the origin out to the one in the middle to the one on the right, above and to the right, the level of total cost increase. In other words, ISO cost, or the level of cost increase as you move outward and to the right, and the level of total cost decrease as you move inward and closer to the origin. Now we've combined the ISO cost curves with an earlier isoquant. And we said before that an individual would be assumed, we assume that the individual would try to select the mix of time and purchased inputs that results in the lowest possible full cost of the commodity. And the least possible, or the least costly way of producing this commodity, in this case, occurs at point E, which is a point of tangency between an isoquant curve and an ISO cost curve. And that occurs when you're using, in this example, TI star units of time and XI star units of purchased inputs. This is perfectly analogous to all the models we've seen before, except now instead of having a firm that's trying to choose a mix of capital and labor or numbers of workers and hours worked per worker and so on, we have a household that's trying to engage in production and consumption decision involving a similar allocation issue. Instead of having firms deciding how many workers and how much capital to use, we have households deciding how much time and how much purchase inputs should be devoted to any activity that a household derives utility from. And again, the analysis is virtually equivalent. Now let's talk about what happens when the wage rate increases. An increase in the wage results, in this case, in two types of substitution effects. The diagram at the bottom of the screen here illustrates one of these substitution effects. And this is a substitution effect which is quite similar to what we've seen before. That is, the wage rate increases, the slope of the ISO cost curve, so the absolute value of the slope more precisely, increases, which means the ISO cost curves all become steeper. And so we move from the ISO cost curve, which is tangent at point A, to an ISO cost curve, which is now tangent at point B, as we shift from the flatter to the steeper ISO cost curves in response to the higher wage rate. So in response to the higher wage, we see this individual moves from TA to TB, using less of their own time in household production and consumption, but moves from XA to XB and increases the amount of purchased inputs. And what this is suggesting, basically, is that as the opportunity cost of time increases relative to the relative price of purchased inputs, households will use less time and more purchased inputs. So we see a substitution of time at work, or we see it, the replacement of some time in household production by purchased inputs. So households where wage rates are higher will tend to spend less time in any activity they're engaged in and will tend to spend more on purchased inputs. As an example of that, suppose we consider a household that's thinking about taking a vacation. That if they're going to take a vacation, say they're going to take a trip to Disney World and they're leaving from upstate New York, hypothetically, that when the wage rate is lower, they might choose to take that trip by perhaps driving to Disney World, where they're spending a lot of their time, but the cost of purchase inputs is relatively low. If the wage rate goes up, they might choose instead to fly, where they're spending less of their own time in terms of the time spent in transportation services and so on, the amount of time spent to get there, but they're spending more on purchased inputs, more on the airline ticket, for example. So that's a type of substitution that we see here. Similarly, in a household, when the wage rate goes up, individuals might choose to spend, one or more individuals in the household may choose to spend less of their time in childcare and spend more time on purchased inputs by hiring babysitters or using daycare services or something similar. Also, though, going to be a second type of substitution effect. And this is derived from the fact that some activities are inherently more time intensive than other activities. That, as noted before, for example, raising children is a very time intensive activity compared to other things, such as raising a pet, for example. That, in general, what's going to happen is that when the wage rate goes up, the relative price of time activities increases as compared to goods-intensive activities. So in response to this, those commodities or those activities that are relatively goods-intensive will tend to increase as a share of expenditures when the wage rate goes up, while the share of expenditures devoted to time-intensive activities will tend to decline. So the first type of substitution effect we talked about on the previous screen involved the substitution of purchase inputs for time in the production of a given commodity or a given level of one of these CIs. The second type of substitution effect we're talking about here involves a change in the mix of ZIs. Some ZIs use a large amount of time and few purchased inputs. Others use a very large amount of purchased inputs and little time. For example, the action of watching TV requires a lot of time but very little in the way of purchased inputs. Okay. Yachting, on the other hand, spending time on a yacht, while it does require some time, requires a much larger share of expenditures on purchased inputs. Okay. In general, what we see here is that those activities that require large amounts of time become relatively more expensive, and households would tend to shift the mix of goods they consume in response to the change in the relative price of time. So when the wage rate is higher, goods-intensive activities will rise, and time-intensive activities will tend to fall because of the change in relative prices. Okay. Now, under both types of substitution effect, though, we're going to see less total time being spent in household production and a larger amount of time being spent in the paid labor market as a result of the time being freed up by the substitution of goods for time in the production of a given commodity and by the substitution of goods-intensive for time-intensive activities. There's always also, though, going to be an income effect. That's what's being illustrated on this diagram. That as the wage rate goes up, individuals can now afford to consume more of all of the ZIs, or each of the ZIs if they so choose. In general, to be more precise, their consumption of the normal commodities will increase, while inferior commodities would decrease. In general, though, the total amount of time devoted to household production would tend to increase as a result of an increase in the level of consumption. That not only, for example, do we see individuals perhaps changing the way in which they consume vacations, where they might consume vacations using more purchased inputs and less time through the substitution effect, but on the other hand, now that the wage rate is higher, they can afford to take more vacations and perhaps longer vacations. This effect tends to increase the amount of time spent in household production. Now that people are getting paid more, they can afford to take more time off from work to spend on those activities that they derive satisfaction from. So we see an increase in general in the total amount of expenditures on the ZIs, and that requires the use of more of both purchased inputs and time. But given the higher wage, households can afford more purchased inputs and more time. So now, as before, we have substitution effects, where when the wage rate goes up, individuals will tend to spend more time at work, except now it's for two different types of substitution effect rather than just one in our earlier model. And we also have an income effect which tends to reduce the quantity of labor supply when the wage rate goes up. Therefore, an individual will be operating in the upward sloping portion of the budget constraint if the combined substitution effects are larger in magnitude than the income effect, but they'll be operating on a backward bending portion of the budget constraint if the income effect is larger than these combined substitution effects.